Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today I have as my guest Yeon Lee. I am very happy to see her again. She has written a profound book. Some are calling it memoir, some are calling it essays. I'm considering it as a contemplation of the world from a perspective we don't all share. I happen to share this perspective. I think many readers and writers do, which is an experience of sadness, grief, loneliness, so strong that it brings us close to an almost constant suicidal ideation, and may even lead from time to time to hospitalization, certainly to medication. So this is a book of a period of the 2 years after Yeon wrote her last novel,
Kinder Than Solitude.
We had talked about this book with great intimacy. I didn't know what it took for you to write this book. This book brought you closer to a self you did not want to acknowledge, yes?
Yes, and I didn't know I was going to write a book. And I also, I suppose while I was writing the book, my thought was these words would never be read by anyone. I was just going to write to confront myself, to question myself, and that's how I could start the book.
This new book is called Dear Friend from My Life, I Write to You in Your Life. That's a phrase from a journal of Catherine Mansfield.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that there's a group of writers that include Catherine Mansfield, Elizabeth Bowen,
Marianne Moore. Turgenev.
Yes.
Yes. All my friends.
Yes, very much so.
Yes.
And very much Marianne Moore. People, in a way, who we can't imagine being alive.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the letters of Marianne Moore, you comment, Yeon, that you can't imagine such a person of such extraordinary restraint being alive. And the poetry is so beautiful that it is unwilling to give up its meanings.
It's all that power to, you know, keep everything away. But that's her way to keep the fighting for her life and for her art, I think.
It's magnificent, isn't it? And so the poems of Marianne Moore, like your own work, that seem like they're going to be the most personal. One of her longest poems is a poem called Marriage. And at first you think, she's going to tell us about staying single for her life. As far as we know, no significant others. But the further we read in it, the more stunned we are, the more beautiful it is, and the more bewildered we are about it.
Yes, Marianne Moore, I mentioned in the book, a lot of writers I have been reading and I have been able to figure out something about these writers. Marianne Moore still just fascinates me.
Would you dare to say, as I do, that the writers we care most about come from a different world, are emanations of a different way of being?
Yes, absolutely. And I like what you said, there's another world. And I mean, these writers, I think they write and they exist in that world. And that's how they touch us so deeply. And I was talking to a friend once and I said, well, everybody says my writing is so bleak. But I would feel really bleak. I have to go out to talk about parties with people. And that's the bleakest moment for me.
Oh, yes. And I don't even think it's necessarily bleakness, but I think that parties who come to us, to use the word parties in a better, more gentle sense, these special eminences who arrive in our world from elsewhere are there to tell us about a different set of habits and different way of being that is not dependent that way upon constant happiness or the foolishness of constant success.
Yes. You know, it reminds me, I was reading, well, I was thinking, of course, you know, as everybody was thinking about futility, you know, at this moment. So I went to dictionary. I look up futile, the word. It came from originally, it meant leaking, life leaking out of you.
Oh, my.
And I thought, well, you know, I think the writers like Marianne Moore, they are anti-leaking. They are anti-futility writer.
Well, I met a man named Fred Siegel once who told me that he would go and visit Marianne Moore in her apartment. I was very lucky. I was a reader. I once had the privilege of being there. Mm-hmm. But what he told me was any time people came, she would give them money or tokens to go back on the subway or the bus. And I think it was her sense that when you visited her, you had gone to a world that you might not get back from. Unless she gave you
a token. Isn't that a great gesture?
Isn't that a beautiful gesture, that understanding she had that she was really other?
Yes. When she went to the circus and she cut the elephant's tail, the hair from the elephant's tail, so she could make a bracelet for herself. And she gave Elizabeth Bishop some bananas so she could distract the elephants.
Distract the elephants while she got hair from the elephant's tail to make a bracelet.
Yes.
Now tell me, because, you know, this book, Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life, we're talking about a transaction between borders. Mm-hmm. Do you feel as if you are writing from your life to a life in another place?
Yes. And this life in the other place also evolved as I was writing. At first, I thought I was purely just writing to these writers I have been reading in the past few years, because they were the writers who kept me alive. So I was reading really just to communicate with them. At some point, I realized the world, you know, that world I came from, the world starts to come into the book. And in the last sentence, actually, I wrote to myself, dear friend, to myself. So I also became my friend, which I would say, you know, if you're your own friend, you would not have, you know, try to kill yourself, for instance. So I think this realization I can call myself dear friend, that's important too.
Yes. As I read, Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life by my guest Yun Lee, the density of this thought. It's a difficult book to write. It is essentially saying that within a suicidal person, there are two people.
Mm-hmm.
One who wants to live and has arguments for that, and one who wants to die. And it is that feeling of being at war with oneself that increases the suicidal mentation, because you're trying to defeat the life-loving aspect. When reading, you are in the presence of another
mm-hmm.
who you know, who does not know you. So you know these characters in the book, and you can fight with them, but not so that you have to kill them, but so that you can know them more deeply and pray.
They know you some?
Yes, or pray that they will never know you.
They will never. I think that I don't even have to pray. I know for sure they would never know me.
Yes, and where does it come from, this desire not to be known?
I think the desire not to be known, or the desire not to be seen, is, you know, I understand that it's probably just by nature a self-preservation, you know, instinct, self-preserving instinct. And I was thinking about what you said, the life-loving self and the self that has this strong desire to annihilate itself. When they fight with each other, it's almost like your emotional self is having this autoimmune disease. You are the enemy of you. You know, you produce all these antibodies, for instance, to fight your own being. And I think when you read, say you go into a novel or you read Marianne Moore's letters, you are with people, you know, they are not part of you, but they are part of you in that they are not going to hurt you in that way that you hurt yourself.
Oh, that's very meaningful to me, because when I read Marianne Moore's letters, you know, I love her poems, love them so deeply, especially An Octopus of Ice.
Mm.
I love that poem. It's one of the reasons that poetry is permanent in my life.
Mm.
And yet, I can't get any closer to it. So I wanted to read the letters. And there again, pretty soon, she and her brother and her mother, brothers, they have names for each other. She calls her mother Mole, and there you are in as esoteric and weird a world as you are in her poetry. You cannot enter. This does not invite your penetration. It's almost as if to say, you in your world are a person of interest to me insofar as you treat me with restraint. Use the same restraint as I use, please. You are in my presence, but please do not violate my presence.
Yeah. It's really the most elegant thing about her being is, you know, she doesn't include you and she doesn't invite you. But I think that makes her, you know, poetry alive.
Oh, so much.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think that the extent to which we love without understanding is one of the gifts that literature gives us. It's a life experience, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the experience of the people we love most deeply and would not part from although they infuriate us.
Yes, you know, I noticed that people would say, especially to people close to them, I don't understand you. I think that's why you're, you know, you feel close, because I don't understand you. That's the center of a relationship.
You are profound and ambiguous to me, like a great work of art. I just read a short story of yours, Yun Li, in The New Yorker. What was it called?
It's called A Small Flame.
Yes. And the story moves as if it's going to be a story, and then two of its characters depart, and one is left alone, and she moves, paralyzed, backwards in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the story so fascinating in the way in which it refused to make me its friend.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Am I speaking correctly?
That's absolutely right. When I was writing that story, I thought, this is an unkind story. This story does not have a lot of kindness for anyone. But this is a story about, as you said, a woman moving back to memory. But there was one moment when she thought, when she was a little girl, she wanted to kill another girl. She wanted to starve this little girl in a closet. I got a chill when I wrote that line. I thought, why would you do that? But that's how she, that's the truest herself coming out to exclude me from her life. But that makes me just want to write about her, or at least know about her, not to understand her, maybe.
Absolutely. I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Yun Li about her book, Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life, published by Random House. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and welcome back. I'm talking with Yun Li about her latest book, Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life, a book that beautifully explores the question, why? Why live? For so many people, they say that suicide and sadness are an occupational hazard of writing. You must be willing to enter those overwhelming, unretractable spaces. Now, you speak in certain ways in this book, particularly about your mother as a figure who inspired in your childhood very difficult feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It's paradoxical because you were her favorite.
Yes.
But it meant you had to take care of her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she would go around saying that she liked you better than your sister.
Yes, she did that all the time.
Now, do these miseries of understanding come from an actual place? Are they inspired by actual experiences and then transmuted, do you think?
The experience of my experience of other characters?
Of solitude, of being mm-hmm. treated by someone
yeah.
who's telling you,
right.
you're my favorite, your sister is not. I want to put your sister in a room and starve her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the cruelty, it's interesting. I think, you know, love is a kind of intrusion too. You know, not being loved or not loving, you're withdrawing something from a person. But when you love someone, you can be intrusive. So I think all my life, you're right, I think my mother and I have this complicated relationship, and I'm trying to just protect myself from a kind of intrusive love.
Did that make you feel sorrow for your sister?
Yes, I think sorrow and guilty, and, you know, what if we just change place? I always thought, you know, she could be the good one. You know, I would love for her to be the favored person.
Now, you were speaking about the war with oneself as being like a damage to the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it is said that you came to America in order to study immunology. You were expecting to be a doctor, but could it be that you were already a doctor and that in the English language, you never wrote in Chinese, but in the English language, something about immunology was latent and present to you?
Yes. You know, I think it is possible to imagine another life without taking up writing at all. But you did ask a question. I was thinking, you said, is sorrow or sadness and these feelings, are they coming just from being a writer? Or because I have them, and then, you know, maybe writing becomes one natural selection or natural choice for me.
I'm so fascinated by this book, Dear Friend, From My Life I Write to You in Your Life, because, as you say, you deal with very real issues, and then you retreat behind your interest in the writers who keep you alive, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
But the introductory, the title essay, which won a Best Essay Award, is trying to address, without a screen, the question of hospitalization, suicide, one's anger at the people in rehab who refuse to understand that your feelings, while dangerous to you, are also precious to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is particularly true for a writer, that in the world of rehab, a writer is especially vulnerable, do you think?
Yes. It's interesting you said the first essay did not have a screen or did not have a mask. It was written without, you know, any sense of self, I would say, you know, or self hiding.
It's so beautiful. I had to read it three times before I entered it. It was like a labyrinth whose entrance I couldn't find. And once I was in, I couldn't get out.
That's a person's mind. I think that's the danger of entering a person's mind, maybe.
Yes. Well, I think that the sadness can be, you say that I said that it has to do with a writer's life. I think it has to do with the reader's life.
Mm.
I think it has to do with all lives that have not been scolded. You know, there are people who've been raised and been told, stop it, be happy. You are not allowed to be in my house with these moody, petulant behaviors. Your tantrums will not be tolerated. And they've been raised to be...
I don't know. I think they're raised to be, like, either they hide themselves or they are raised to pay a lot of attention to the things that are just on the surface and never get in touch with, you know, the deeper feelings. And that's scary to me.
Yes. Well, I think it's also that they've been told that the fight within oneself is not worth fighting. Mm-hmm. Come away from this. Watch television with me.
Yes. Well, that's exactly right. I think people would say the fight with yourself, that's a futile. It's, you know, there's a futility in that fighting. But no, that's not. That's the opposite. You know, avoiding that fight, that's leaking. That's life leaking out of you.
Here we have a book, Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life. And it is about the depth of spirit that leads to self-destructive and suicidal thinking. Mm. And yet at the same time, it's something like the same thinking that makes us love a book this way. Mm-hmm. What is the connection, do you think?
The connection is, you know, I see this as the book, I see it written out of deep sorrow, but also deep hope for something. And it's not the hope that, you know, you can describe as sunny or, you know, there's, I think it connects at a place where hope and despair meet. And I'm at ease with that place. I accept that's where I'm going to be.
Oh, that's extraordinary. I hope so.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Yiyun Lee, author of Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life, published by Random House. It is a book that will help you to think in ways you have not thought about before, about somberness, sorrow, death, and yet also about love and the love of literature and the riches of solitude. I found it to be a fascinating book, and I carried it with me, reading it and from it again and again and again. Thank you very much for it.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Yours at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Join me again next time on Bookworm when Alan Felsenthal is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.